Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Have a good weekend.
What?
You didn't? I certainly hope you did. Hope you had a great weekend. We have a lot of ground to cover tonight, but guess what? We're doing a contest this week. Every night. And every night we're going to start the program with it. How many of you, let me see a show of hands here, how many of you are familiar with Glastonbury? That's the world's longest running music festival. Everybody has appeared there. Everybody from Radiohead, Cypress Hill, Coldplay, Pink Floyd, Paul McCartney, Bjork. I know how many Bjork fans there are that listen to this program. We are giving away every night this week, how many? Four. They're double DVD sets of, it's a documentary, a musical documentary from the director. The director of this is Julian Temple, that incorporates footage from the last 30 years of this festival. And we saw a preview of, you talk about some performances from world-class musicians and interviews with some of these performers. It's incredible. Staggering range of music has appeared at Glastonbury over the past three decades. And this movie includes performances, like I mentioned, everybody from Cypress Hill, Radiohead, Coldplay, David Gray, Chemical Brothers, David Bowie, Bjork, Pink Floyd, Bob Marley, Oasis, The White Stripes, Paul McCartney. You're going to love this. If you're a music fan, if you are familiar with Glastonbury, about this concert that's been going on every year for 30 years, this festival, this is for you. Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. In order not to drag this out all night, we're going to do a musical trivia thing right here at the beginning of the program. And we're giving away four of these double DVD sets. So here's the way to work. The first four people that call in with the correct name of the, what do you want, Kathy? The song? The cut? Oh, she's pointing over here. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, correctly identify the cut that Kathy will play and the artist. Okay? So the way it works, be one of the first four callers to correctly identify the song and the artist that Kathy's going to play coming into this first break at the program here. First break. At the end of this little segment where I'm talking like an idiot, when you hear the theme, the music going out, it'll be the artist that we want you to identify and the song that the artist is playing, the tune, the cut that the artist is playing. And if you get it right, if you're one of the first four callers, Ian is waiting with his pen poised in Phoenix at Mission Control. And if you are one of the first four callers, each one of the first four callers who gets it right, we're giving away four of these sets. So you can be caller 1, 2, 3, 4. It doesn't matter. As long as you have the artist and the song that that artist is playing, you get one. We'll ship it to you. And please only call if you have the correct answer. Musically adroit listeners will get these. Okay? And we'll take regular calls to the program after this segment. So right here at the beginning, just people who are participating in the contest. Yes, Catherine?
And just so everybody knows, the artists will all be ones that are featured in the Glastonbury.
Well,
yeah. Well, no, we didn't say that.
Well, I just assume people would know.
No,
that,
we
huh?
shouldn't assume that. They'll all be artists that are featured, have played and are featured in the film.
Okay. How long does this run? If it's a two-disc DVD set, good God, what is this, 6 hours? Do you have any idea how long it runs? This is a big deal. A big deal. This is the a documentary that's been filmed over 30 years, 140 minutes, 2 hours and 20 minutes. You can go to thinkfilmcompany.com. Those are the people who have produced this or are distributing it. Think Film. If you want to go to their website, go to thinkfilmcompany.com. Thinkfilmcompany.com. And you'll see what I'm talking about here. All right? So in about 3.5-4 minutes, Kathy is going to play the tonight's cut. You identify the who's playing and the name of the song, and you win. And Ian will take the pertinent information. We'll mail it to you. Okay? Isn't this fun? I'm just so excited. And we'll be doing this every night this week at the beginning of the program. So if you're listening to this on Tuesday night, you're saying, well, I've just iPod the program, listen to it on Tuesday afternoon, and you're hearing this, you have a chance to win one of these two-disc sets, DVD sets, but you've got to call in live and to get it, all right? So, the air is just electric with anticipation here. Who is going to be the first artist? What is going to be the title of the first song? Who is going to win one of four double disc DVDs tonight on the Mike Malloy program here on Nova M Radio Network? God, I can hardly stand it. Go to Think Film. What is it? Think Film Company? All spelled out. Company? ThinkFilmCompany.com. Take a look at the Glastonbury lineup. There may be some trailers in there that you can look at, too. Last week, remember when Senator Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, delivered his assessment of Peter Pace's performance as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs and demanded that Congress be given a fair, honest, and frank report about conditions in Iraq? That was before they decided to replace him. And Reid went on to say that Peter Pace is a distinguished military veteran. Unfortunately, in my opinion, he has never been as candid as he should have been about the conduct and progress of the war. In other words, you remember this. Last Wednesday or Thursday, Harry Reid more or less called Peter Pace a liar, which is fair, which is exactly what Peter Pace is, which is exactly what David Petraeus is, which is exactly what most of the military high command in the United States are. They are liars, the ones who are still in active duty. The ones who speak the truth were either cashiered or resigned because they were speaking the truth about our great adventure of murder and mayhem in Iraq. Okay? Now, Tony Snell, the White House spokesman, said, he got right in line with other Republicans and said the following. In a time of war, for a leader of a party that says it supports the military, it seems outrageous to be issuing slanders toward the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and also the man that is responsible for the bulk of military operations in Iraq. Now, that's what he said. However, of course, Peter Pace was fired. But I think what this, by Bush, I think what this points out is how Republicans, from Tony Snow up and down the spectrum, Republicans despise the truth. Have you ever noticed this? I don't know why. I mean, I've said before, they're all liars. But I thought they were, you know, the lying was, what do you call it, lying to gain an advantage. No. The truth is, Republicans all despise the truth. They hate it. No matter what the truth is, it can be about U.S. foreign policy, U.S. military policy, their religions, science, environmental degradation, global heating. It doesn't make any difference what the issue is. Republicans hate the truth. Why is that? Why do they despise? I think I'm going to cogitate on that during this break. While you listen to this music, come up with the title and the author, I mean the performer, and you win. Call us at 800-989-1480. Ready? Here we go.
Yes, hello. it's hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House to give you an assessment, first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Yeah, the times you have gone there has just been an acid trip, right, George? He got an assessment today, and he was reassured. An hour-long secure video teleconference with Iraqi leaders today. And according to Tony Snow, Mr. Bush came away impressed and reassured by the progress they're making on political security and economic reforms. Yeah. We'll have a little more about that in a moment, and we'll let you see how insane that is. Meanwhile, our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, Sharon, who writes to us very frequently and keeps us well supplied with, especially from the military slash political aspect of U.S. policy, domestic and foreign, because that is her field of expertise. Sharon wrote to me and said, I was out of town last week, and I'm trying to catch up on your shows. You mentioned Joe Lieberman on last Monday's show. Wes Clark's reaction to Lieberman's threats against Iran made me think of something General William T. Sherman said in a letter in 1865. William Tecumseh Sherman said, quote, "It is only those who have never heard a shot, never heard the shriek and groans of the wounded and lacerated, that cry aloud for more blood, more vengeance, more desolation," end quote. Then Sharon adds, I'm a white farm girl from southeast Georgia. The left wing of Sherman's army came through my hometown and camped on the farm I was raised on. It pains me greatly to quote Sherman, but he knew what he was talking about. And then what she sent me from last week, middle of last week, what Clark said, about Lieberman threatening military force against Iran. Now, you remember, Clark is the former Supreme Allied NATO commander, and he is now the chairman of the Board of Advisors of VoteVets.org. And I just love it when these right-wing weasels, these little cowardly Republicans, try to challenge General Wesley Clark. It's always great sport to see these little chicken hawks fluttering around in the presence of somebody who's been there and done that. Whether you agree with Clark's military adventures or not, they weren't his, they were Bill Clinton's, but whether you agree with that or not is kind of immaterial in the context of what we're talking about here. About Clark understands what war and death and destruction is about. Lieberman's lucky he understands what a bad traffic jam is about. But he's advocating another country be invaded, bombed, attacked by the United States. He says that Lieberman had been irresponsible in saying Sunday a week ago, that such action against Iran might be necessary. Here's what Clark said, quote, "What we need now is full-fledged engagement with Iran. All options may be on the table, but we should be striving to bridge the gulf of almost 30 years of hostility. And only when all else fails should there be any consideration of other options. Only someone who never wore the uniform or thought seriously about national security would make threats at this point. What our soldiers need is responsible strategy, not a further escalation of tensions in the region. Senator Lieberman has to act much more responsibly and tone down his threat machine," end quote. Now, remember what Lieberman said. If the Iranians don't play by the rules, oh, Jesus, Joe, like we do? Oh, my God, we suspend the rules, Joe. Hey, Lieberman, are you so far around the bend you don't know Abu Ghraib and torture and attacking a country that never did anything to us, destabilizing the Middle East, suspending the Geneva Conventions, advocating torture, rendition? Oh, my God. And Lieberman has the audacity to say if the Iranians don't play that by the rules, we've got to use force. And then he says, and to me, that would include taking military action to stop them from doing what they're doing. Hey, Holy Joe, put that funky-looking helmet back on and that asinine Kevlar vest you had on and your rolled-up shirt sleeves and your bow tie and take your ass right in front of a squad of Marines and go ahead and invade Iran. Oh, that's right. You're not talking about a land invasion. Joe Lieberman. You know, a lot of people have written to me and said, well, you know, Malloy, how can you support Al Gore when Lieberman was his running mate? Let me tell you something, truth seekers. And surely you know this. Al Gore didn't pick Joe Lieberman. That was done for him by the Democratic Leadership Conference. Gore didn't want anything to do with that. But on that go-around back in 1999, 2000, Al Gore thought he didn't have a choice. He knows now he does.
Of our leadership, greedy and arrogant, and we'll all be judged by the choices that we made. We don't want a war. It's all seen louder now. We don't want a war.
The unrest in the Middle East creates unrest throughout the region.
Oh, I can't stand it. 26 before the hour. We have our winners. Matter of fact, let's talk to one right now. David, who is calling from San Diego. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Good for you. You got it right. Who was the artist and what was the song?
That was the one and only Morrissey doing Sister, I'm a Poet.
All right. Well, we've got you, your information. Ian took your address in city and state. You live in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll be sending it out to you tomorrow. It's a two-disc set of Glastonbury. I'm sure you're familiar with Glastonbury.
Oh, yeah.
What it represents. Yeah. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you participating, okay?
Well, thank you, man. Keep up the good work, too.
Thanks, David. Take care.
I listen to you every day after work.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Let's see. Mike in Baton Rouge, David in San Diego, Jimmy in San Diego, and Ray in, is that Tooele, Utah? T-O-O-E-L-E. How do you say that? I don't either. Anyway, to Mike, David, Jimmy, and Ray, you guys are winners, and you will receive the two-disc DVD set of Glastonbury Music Festival, recorded over the past 30 years with some of the greatest artists, greatest recording artists out there. Well, now that was fun! Oh, my God, we never do anything like that. This is such a intense kind of beat your head against the wall program, which we're going to get back to right now. All right, we're going to do that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So congratulations to our four winners. Now, where were we? Where were we indeed? You know, I ought to be, you know what we ought to do, Kathy? We ought to just, we ought to become, we ought to have a disc jockey program. And just do music. 140,000 emails from Karl Rove illegally destroyed. Good God. You know, I used to talk about how the Reagan administration was the most criminal in the history of this republic because the Reagan administration had the most of its appointees or people involved in that administration go to prison, indicted, went to trial, resigned under a cloud of suspicion, or just got out of Dodge as soon as people started to notice that what they were doing was not exactly on the up and up. And I don't know, back in the early 90s, late 80s, I guess the late 80s, Yeah, because Pappy Bush came in and was elected in 88. But we did an analysis of how many Reagan administration officials were charged with or convicted of some form of government malfeasance, corruption, obstruction, perjury. And we came to over 200 Reagan appointees. And I think that's the reason Republicans look back on the Reagan years as the golden years. Well, of course you do, because you Republicans despise the truth, you're cowards, and you're liars. So of course you would look back on the Reagan administration as being, you know, the salad days of the Republican Party, which is effectively dead as of this last election. You'll see in 2008, oh my God, will you see. But the Bush crime family is... I mean, all right, Reagan invaded Grenada. And is that the only place Reagan invaded? I know he turned tail and ran when 140 or 168. Oh, damn, 240. I forget the number, and I'm ashamed to say that. Marines were blown to pieces at the Marine barracks that were built in Beirut, Lebanon. And talk about turning and running. Reagan ordered all U.S. troops to pull out of Lebanon after that attack, that suicide bombing attack that occurred killed so many United States Marines. And within a few days, Reagan had turned around and to divert attention, of course, he ordered an invasion of Grenada, that little island somewhere in the Caribbean that had a couple of Cuban electricians putting in light switches for the locals down there. And that was a big threat to the United States. But this Bush crime family, it's unbelievable what they've done. And I don't think a full assessment, I don't think a full impact. You know, we just ricochet from day to day, don't we? It's this blatant disregard for the law, this destruction of that part of the Constitution, this invasion of that country. Something leaks out about torture, about sadomasochism that is promoted by the Bush crime family. Rendition, isn't that a cute word for scooping people up and then sending them places where they can be tortured by our allies like Egypt or Saudi Arabia or some godforsaken place in the Far East? To get what? Information? No. To justify what we're doing. If you torture somebody, they'll confess to anything. Then you can take the confession and say, look what we're doing. We're protecting America. We're fighting terrorism. This is so bad. It's just so ungodly bad, this Bush crime family. Now this. Now, it doesn't sound like, oh, so what? 140,000 row of emails illegally destroyed. So what? It's another violation, multiple violation of the law. Waxman's committee, the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, for the past several months has been investigating whether White House officials violated the Presidential Records Act. Are you kidding? They have now learned, investigators for this committee, that the Bush administration's use of the Republican National Committee email accounts is much greater than previously disclosed. 140,216 emails sent or received by Karl Rove alone. And that the RNC had overseen, quote, extensive destruction, end quote. Including all email records for 51 White House officials. Do you know what this is? Oh, my God. This is called destroying the evidence. Do you know what happens when you destroy the evidence? You become part of a conspiracy. You become an accessory after the fact. And your ass goes to prison. That's what happens. I love the way it's reported at Alternet. Given the heavy reliance by White House officials on RNC email accounts, the high rank of the White House officials involved in this, and the large quantity of missing emails, the potential violation of the Presidential Records Act may be extensive. Now, regardless of what Too Much Cappuccino Perino claimed when she said that about 50 White House officials used RNC mail accounts, the committee, Waxman's committee, learned that at least 88 White House officials had RNC mail email accounts. This was a deliberate, calculated conspiracy to violate the law over and over and over again. And sitting at the top of this monstrous heap of thugs and perjurers and lawbreakers is Dick Cheney and George Bush. I'm sorry. Are Dick Cheney and George Bush. It's incredible. And Gonzalez knew about this. Alberto Gonzalez, the chief law enforcement officer of this republic, was in on the deal. He was a conspirator in violating the law repeatedly, over and over and over again. And what did we impeach Bill Clinton for? Oh, that's right. But Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say, nah, it's off the table. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, here's the catch. This is where, you know, these slick, slimy rat bastards, you know, like Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and the, whoever these other 88 thugs are, I think one thing they may not have been aware of, and that is, even if they use the RNC accounts, if anybody was copied, if a recipient other than Karl Rove or whomever he wrote to has a copy, he's screwed. Now, who has those? Greg Palast! I don't think Greg has 140,000 of them, but he's got enough. I hope Greg is taking care of his own personal safety right now, Kathy. I get worried about the man. A constant, unending violation of the law. Well, you know, when this Bush crime family came to office, they had no intention of following any law. Not separation of powers, not the United States Constitution, not international treaties, not the Geneva Conventions. Not the restrictions and rules against torture and rendition. Nothing. Nothing. They came to office fully intending to break every single law on the books. And by God, they have succeeded.
When their beliefs ain't really what they believe. Try to defy the indivisible. Because they think we're fools. So
I don't email, however. And there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
Oh, is that the reason? Stan wrote in, thanks, Stan, for helping me pronounce Ray's hometown, one of the winners of our double disc DVD set. It's Tooele. Tooele, Utah. Tooele. Thanks. I didn't think it was Tool. Tooele. Thank you, Stan. All right. On the 140,000 emails, let's talk with Mike, who's calling in from Gilbert, Arizona. Mike, welcome to the program.
Mr. Malloy, very pleased to speak to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for everything that I've been hearing here for the last few years.
Well, I appreciate that.
Not that I really wanted to hear this stuff.
Oh, I know, I know.
I'm glad you're doing it.
I hear what you. I know. I know what you mean.
All right, sir. On the emails and this bloody fiasco. Not one whisper from mainstream media.
Yeah, what's up with that? I know. Never mind. That was a stupid question.
I'm fairly diligent on at least touching base with what's online, what's in a newspaper. Nothing on the American media. Actually, nothing internationally that I saw. Which has just reinforced in the last few weeks, my wife and I have been discussing this. We've been working for the last almost year and a half to move at least half of our assets overseas, which we've done.
Uh-huh.
And we have a 9-year-old. And we are neither affluent nor poverty-stricken.
Right, right.
We don't think this is going to be a good place to stay. And that's how weird it's gotten.
Well, Kathy and I have kind of had in a general manner of speaking, the same sort of conversation. We haven't done anything about it and have no plans to do anything about it. And I'm sure a lot of people have also had that discussion, and it's just it infuriates me that we have to have that discussion, Mike.
Well, you know, I'm somewhat of it. I'm familiar with history, and for about 30 years of reasonably serious reading, and it's not like there's a big sign that pops out across the windshield on your morning commute that says it's time to go. Mm-hmm. However, there are steps anyone can take to get at least something out of the control of whoever you are maybe afraid of.
Right.
So that if you succeed in getting across the border, you won't be in a refugee camp.
Yeah.
And my little one is, one, very important, but she's also very bright. She deserves a future. And I don't see that she can have the future here that I did. This is not the same country that I grew up in 40 years ago.
No, it isn't. There's been an erosion that, sad to say, both parties have contributed to, but the Republicans have forced just monumentally. They have gone for this neo-fascism. The Democrats haven't done a hell of a lot to hold it back.
And that's kind of what's accelerated, is seeing the complete lack of urgency to unroll whatever. Certainly whatever's happened in the last 5 years, but, you know, we've got about 30 years of work to be done. But I'd settle for, you know, how about habeas corpus? Is that too much to ask?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of guys who never bathed and had lice on them but wore really good, cool suits got this from an English king almost 1,000 years ago. I mean, why are we walking away from that?
Because Republicans... and apparently some leading Democrats are more comfortable here in 2007 with a form of corporatism or fascism that eliminates the need to think creatively from a political point of view. And you know, why resist? I guess the attitude is, why resist? We've had 40 or 50 years of corporations slowly inserting themselves into our process of self-government and writing our laws. And the Democrats, I think, take a look at this. Republicans couldn't care less because this is what they like. Republicans are cowards and they can't think clearly. But Democrats look at this and I think they say, well, you know, we've had 40 or 50 years of this. Why should we fight now? It's almost a fait accompli. So why that's the part that drives me insane. Perhaps it does you too.
Well, there is a beautiful symmetry to it. This latest little fiasco in the Middle East between Gaza Strip and the Western, the West Bank, that's quote, you have a two Palestinian states as the two-state solution. And
yeah, who'd have thunk it would have been the Palestinians?
Right. And wonderful Condi, between trying on shoes, has said, oh, now we'll start letting them have money, which they haven't had for over a year.
Yeah.
And this is to support Palestinian humanity. After you've created the fiasco by starving them,
sure,
get as many desperate animals in a small location as possible, let them tear each other apart, create as much blood and chaos as possible, and you've achieved your goal of breaking down whatever Palestine might have been possible, now you say, okay, we'll go ahead and give them a little bit of money. And that's the symmetry to it, and I think the Democrats are taking on the same philosophy, is after we've been torn and ripped asunder, we'll go ahead and possibly raise a non-binding resolution.
It's incredible.
So anyway, sir, I do thank you.
Well, Well, thank you, Mike.
Please keep on doing it.
Okay, and I'm glad you're out there, and I'm glad you contribute by calling in, and thank you. A very good call, and you make some good points. Thanks a lot, sir. I appreciate it. Is it time to break? It is time to break. You know, Mike pointed out something that just blew right by me, the absolute, utter, insane, gibberish, gibbering, throat-burning irony. The two-state solution has finally been worked out, only it's two Palestinian states. Oh, my God. And what the problem the Palestinians had when they were told about democracy, when they were said, you know, we want representative government in the occupied territories, even though they're occupied, and they had the absolute temerity to elect Hamas. Why did they elect Hamas? Because PLO and PLA and Fatah had tried and tried and tried for how long? 60 years to work with the United States and the UK, both of whom could have applied pressure to Israel at any time in the past 60, and the Israelis, Israeli right-wingers. I'm not talking about the peace movement people there, the two-state people in Israel. And everybody turned their back on the Palestinians. So what happened? Hamas. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Malloy here on Nova M Radio Network. Bush had a teleconference today with the leaders of Iraq. If you can imagine such a thing, there are no leaders in Iraq. There are leaders in various districts of Iraq. There are some Kurdish leaders up north. There are leaders of various factions in the civil war scattered in the central and southern parts of that sad country. But Bush and Cheney and the rest of the neocons want to maintain the fiction that there is a leadership in Iraq with whom they can discuss how to distribute the oil revenues, you see. By the way, Iraq is now ranked second among the world's failed states. Who's first? No, not Afghanistan. Sudan. Iraq has emerged, according to Reuters, as the world's second most unstable country, more than 4 years after George W. Bush ordered the U.S. invasion, according to a survey released today. The first most unstable country is Sudan. The 2007 Failed State Index, produced by Foreign Policy Magazine and the Fund for Peace, said Iraq suffered a third straight year of deterioration in 2006, with diminished results across a range of social, economic, political, and military indicators. Last year, Iraq ranked fourth. So things are improving, George, right? Iraq is moving right up the scale. Next year, it will probably overtake Sudan. Afghanistan? Afghanistan, damn, is in eighth place. Another war-torn country where U.S. and NATO forces are battling an insurgency nearly 6 years after U.S.-led invasion. Afghanistan, oh, hell, it's only in eighth place. We've got to get it up there. Come on, George. Bomb some more children. That'll do it. The report said, quote, Iraq and Afghanistan, the two main fronts In the global war on terror both suffered over the past year, their experiences show that billions of dollars in development and security aid may be futile. Unless accompanied by a functioning government, trustworthy leaders, and realistic plans to keep the peace and develop the economy, end quote. What, pray tell, does that mean? That the Bush crime family's plans are not realistic? No. The report said that Sudan, the world's worst failed state, appears to be dragging down its neighbors, the Central African Republic and Chad, with violence in the Darfur region responsible for at least 200,000 deaths and the displacement of 2 to 3 million people. Well, gosh, isn't the death toll in Iraq about three times that? Isn't the displacement of Iraq residents about the same? Shouldn't Iraq be number one instead of Sudan? The authors of the index said one of the leading benchmarks for failed state status is the loss of physical control of territory or a monopoly on the legitimate use of force, neither of which the Iraqi leadership can maintain. And, of course, other attributes include the erosion of legitimate authority, an inability to provide reasonable public services, the inability to interact with other states as a full member of the international community. This is what George W. Bush and the neocons and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and all these murderous bastards have done to the country of Iraq. Why didn't the United States pull out after they had gotten Saddam Hussein? Wasn't that the goal? Wasn't Saddam Hussein, according to Pappy Bush and Junior Bush, the biggest threat to peace in the Middle East since Adolf Hitler? Well, once they got him and overthrew his government, why stay? Oh, that's right. So anyway, today Bush had a nearly hour-long secure video teleconference, as opposed to an insecure one, I guess, with Iraqi leaders, and came away impressed and reassured by the progress they're making on political security and economic reforms, the White House said. Actually, that means Tony Snow said. Snow said that during the 52-minute teleconference the president had with Iraq's prime minister, Iraq's president, and Iraq's two vice presidents, he was aware that, according to Tony Snow, you've got an environment now where the key leaders are working together on these issues, end quote. This is why our soldiers and Marines are dying, so that the key leaders in a failed state can work together on these issues. What issues? Oh, that's right, political security and economic reforms. The very issues that foreign policy says they have failed miserably and are now the number two failed state on earth. Tony Snow acknowledged that U.S. officials have heard similar positive statements from Iraqi leaders before, but he said, quote, well, we think they are very serious in moving on the key items. I think the president was impressed and reassured by the sense of seriousness that he heard, end quote. Let's pass that word on to the families of American soldiers and Marines when they get the knock on the door that says their son or their daughter is dead. Well, but Mrs. Jones, it's not all a total loss. We realize you've lost your son, but you know Bush was impressed and reassured by the sense of seriousness that he heard from the leaders today. So the fact that your son is dead or your daughter's had her arms blown off, well, you know, stuff happens. It's a war on terror. I'm sorry. You have another kid, don't you? Okay, well, go with that one. Jesus. The shoe lady also was assessing the situation in Iraq in a meeting at the State Department with Iraqi Foreign Minister so-and-so. Now, how do you do that? Condoleezza Rice sits down with Hoshyar Zebari, who is the Iraqi Foreign Minister, and they assess the situation in Iraq. According to reports, they discussed security conditions in northern Iraq, where neighboring Turkey is concerned about the presence of Kurdish rebels. Concerned? Concerned about the presence of Kurdish rebels? Kurdish rebels? What do you mean, Kurdish rebels? They live there! And Turkey's concerned because going way back to the Ottoman Empire, they decided there would be no Kurdistan. Kurdistan, The Kurds to the Turks are kind of like Negroes were to American whites in, oh, I don't know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, last week. So Condi sits down with Mr. Zubari to discuss and assess the situation in Iraq. What do you think, Zubari? Well, I don't know, Condi. What do you think? Well, what do you think? No, you first. Nah. Rice told reporters, quote, "We discussed the importance of not allowing Iraqi territory to be used for acts of terrorism against neighbors, in this case, particularly against Turkey. The Iraqis do not want, and we do not want, their territory to be used for terrorist acts against their neighbor." This is what Condoleezza Rice sits there and talks with Hoshyar Zebari. Now, Hoshyar, you can't... You like my shoes? We can't have those Kurds up there in the northern part of your country. Can't you send an army to go quell that little uprising? You can't? No, Condi, because Mr. Zebari is the foreign minister of a failed state, the number two failed state on earth. The meetings that were conducted via teleconferencing for Chuckle Nuts and at the State Department for the Shoe Lady. Those meetings came a day after General David Petraeus, the U.S. commander in Baghdad, was on television over the week, and he warned that it could take as long as a decade to stabilize Iraq. A decade. He also talked about the Korea option, which is 5 decades.
Like Christians on the Sabbath day. But come Monday morning till the coming Sunday, they will fight their neighbor all along the way.
I'm thinking, I'm getting over it. Oh, you don't love God.
If you don't love your neighbor, if you gossip about him, if you never have mercy, if he gets into trouble and you don't try.
Get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, Lord. 21 past the hour. You know, I forgot to mention tonight about the NovaM Radio chat room. And all you have to do is just be a NovaM founding member, and you can go there. Go to NovamRadio.com. Use your username and password and get on in. Billy Foster moderates and runs that room. There's all kinds of excitement and screaming and yelling going on right now, even as we speak. So check it out, novamradio.com. Go to the chat room. We're talking about Bush being reassured about Iraq. I wonder if he was reassured about Afghanistan. You've been following, haven't you? The slow incremental increase of suicide bombs and car bombs going off in Afghanistan, and our response, which is to murder more children. And it's always, you know, it's always the Afghans' fault. They always, no, they're hiding behind civilians. They deliberately took children in there. What else can other, you know, what other excuse? Why don't we leave these people alone? There is one city, or maybe two, Kabul and Kandahar, where in Pakistan, or I'm sorry, Afghanistan, where the people may want to live in the 19th century. The rest of them want to live in the 12th century. Why not leave them alone? The 21st century will arrive there maybe in the year 2510. Just let it be. Oh, but you see, if you have democracy, then you can jigger the elections. Witness the United States, witness several South American countries now. You can jigger the elections, and then when you want to build a pipeline across Afghanistan, you don't have to go to anybody. You can just, you know, bring in your corporations and lobby the right people in the democratically elected government, and you can get what you want. But you see, when you deal with tribal government, oops, no, Don't think so. Pipeline through our poppy fields? Get out of here. What are you, crazy? Forget about it. Go away. We're happy here. So we beat our women. So what? We also beat our horses. Doesn't mean a thing. God. I know you all know who Paul Craig Roberts is. He was in the Reagan administration. He was, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, I think. He was also a former associate editor of the Wall Street Journal. And he says the Bush should be tried as a war criminal after being impeached. Yeah, I didn't see this on the news either. It's at Red State Hate Monitor, and it's carried today by Daily Kos. Or was it yesterday? I guess it was yesterday. DailyCoast.com. Paul Craig Roberts said that the U.S. government is in the hands of dangerous psychopaths who are a disgrace to the human race and should be arrested as war criminals and turned over to The Hague. This from a former editor of the Wall Street Journal and former Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury under Ronald Reagan. War criminals. War criminals! Dr. Paul Craig Roberts expressed his dire warning that the U.S. government has fallen into the hands of neocon psychopaths. How long have we been saying that on this little teensy-eensy radio program, huh, Kathy? 4 years? Five? Six? But glad to see former Reagan administration officials joining us. That's good. Hi. Hi. According to the writer at Daily Kos, Roberts went further than he has ever gone before in stating that the neocons were worse than Hitler and Stalin because our neocons publicly embraced torture and preemptive war, something that past despots at least tried to hide. Paul Craig Roberts says that the followers of the Bush crime family have a mentality that is, quote, like that of the brown shirts that followed Hitler, end quote. Welcome aboard, Mr. Roberts, or Dr. Roberts. Every American who voted Republican shares responsibility for the great evil America has brought to the Middle East. The evil that America brought to Iraq transcends the tens of or hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians who have been killed and maimed in the conflict. The evil goes beyond the destruction of ancient historical artifacts and the civilian infrastructure of a secular state and the decimation of the lives, careers, and families of millions of Iraqis. The violence and killing that Bush brought to Iraq has spread antagonism between Sunni and Shiite throughout the Middle East with potentially draconian consequences. Bush's war has turned Muslim hearts and minds against America and made terrorism an acceptable means to resist American hegemony. With his mindless war, Bush has created more terrorism than the world has ever seen.
Deutschland is happy and gay. We're marching to a faster pace.
Be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get size down. Originally.
Twenty-five before the hour. It's fascinating to me. Is it to you? Paul Craig Roberts, former Reagan Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury. And as the writer, Red State Hate Monitor, points out, you know, Paul Craig Roberts is a paleoconservative who worked as one of Reagan's main financial henchmen for two terms. And you don't have to be a fan of Reagan's or the Wall Street Journal to pick up on what this guy is saying, Paul Craig Roberts. As the writer points out, Roberts was one of the fathers of Reaganomics, which was the economic plan of the Reagan White House. You know what that did to us. But, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, that sort of thing. And as Red State Hate Monitor points out, we also need as many allies as we can get to help end this disastrous war. Roberts has now left the Republican Party. But the writer goes on to say, as the Senate bill to block torture is blocked itself by Bush and Cheney, the promotion of torture in official circles continues. Paul Craig Roberts outlined his conviction that the torture program was not set up to gain any kind of real information from accused detainees because, here's a newsflash, torture is renowned for extracting useless and false information. Torture me enough, and I'll tell you that my mother was the one who organized the attack on the World Trade Center, right? The real reason for the torture is to make the terrorists implicate themselves and thus create the perception of a real terrorist threat. Roberts, Paul Craig Roberts, has said that the CIA was aware that the vast majority of detainees are not terrorists. Proven by the fact that Pakistani gangsters admitted to rounding up innocent people and selling them to the U.S. government as terrorists for anything up to 25 grand. And these are the people now at Guantanamo Bay. Roberts pointed out that only 9 so-called terrorists have been brought to trial and none has been convicted. Oh, there's David Hicks, but he wasn't convicted. He took a plea bargain, which allowed him to return to Australia, and he's now free at home. Oh, my God. Of course, David Hicks served his sentence. It's like the Red Queen. You're guilty, serve your sentence, then we'll have the trial. David Hicks was swooped up, put in prison, held indefinitely without a trial for 5 years. And then they gave him an offer he couldn't refuse. Hey, just say you're guilty and we'll release you, okay? Jesus, God, just say you're guilty. We got to have one conviction. So Paul Craig Roberts, all over the place. This is not a new name to you. I understand. Paul Craig Roberts, everybody on the... Everybody to the left of these right-wing monsters, which is 78% of the American public now, either has heard of or should know the writings of Paul Craig Roberts. And again, so what? He was Reagan Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Along with, who is the guy, the young guy who came up with Reaganomics and the trickle-down theory? What was his name, Kathy? Remember him? He's just recently been indicted. Yeah. Who was that guy? And then there's this. And then I think we're going to go to your... On Fox News Sunday, Petraeus said that he agreed that U.S. lawmakers would be able to have a, quote, reasonable and realistic sense, end quote, of whether the escalation is working or not working by September. Petraeus, now I'm quoting because I would gouge my own eyes out before I would tune into Fox News Sunday. But according to this, Petraeus said, quote, I've said that all along. I started saying that back in January. I think we have had by then our forces in the mix for a good several months, end quote. Our forces in the mix. That sounds like they're, working in construction projects, doesn't it? Later in the show, however, Petraeus admitted that he did not expect the so-called surge to be done by September, the date set for Petraeus' supposedly make-it-or-break-it report to Congress. No, no, no. Asked by Chris Wallace, this little weasel on Fox News, whether he believed, quote, the job would be done by the surge by September, end quote, Petraeus responded, I do not. No. More lies. More lies. Asked in a follow-up question if that meant enhanced troop levels would continue for some months after that and into 2008, Petraeus refused to answer. Petraeus then went on to endorse what he calls the Korea model for Iraq, which envisions keeping troops in that country for decades. Oh, my God. This is what Bush has done. This is what Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld have done. And then in Afghanistan, where the insurgency counterattacks are mounting steadily, 7 children killed in a U.S.-led coalition airstrike targeting suspected al-Qaeda militants in eastern Afghanistan. And that strike came hours after the deadliest insurgent attack since the Taliban fell in 2001. That was the bus that was blown up. You heard about that on your weekend. Didn't you hear about that? Did you have a good weekend? Huh? 35 people blown into red mist, 52 wounded. In an operation backed by Afghan troops, jets on Sunday targeted a compound that also contained a mosque and a madrasa or Islamic school. Early reports indicated 7 children and several militants, quote, quote, were killed. An army spokesman or coalition spokesman said, quote, if we knew that there were children inside the building, there was no way that that airstrike would have occurred, end quote. What did Bush say? When a child is killed in a roadside bomb, we cry. Is that what he said? We cry? What does he say? He says something. Oh, my God. Yeah, let me hear it.
And we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
How about when we kill them by the half dozen or so? How about when we bomb wedding parties and birthday parties and madrasas and mosques? Oh, God. Are you having a hard time? I gotta talk with you for a second, all right? Listen up. Shh. Face the front of the room just for a moment here, please, just for a moment. Are you starting to reach rage fatigue? Huh? I'm curious because I'm starting to feel that. Every day when I pick up the paper or happen to catch something on mainstream television or go to the blogs, or go to the websites to get more of this horror, I'm finding all of a sudden, are you finding this? Shh, shh, shh. Listen. Are you finding the same thing, that it's getting harder and harder and harder? I don't know. To feel the kind of rage you felt last month and 6 months ago and 8 months ago, are you starting to hit rage fatigue? I need to know this. I need to know that it's not just me. Because if it is just me, then I'm losing my humanity or soul or something like that. Rage. Have you, listen up. Come here. Maybe you can send me an email, because I don't want to discuss this on the air. I don't want to talk about, I'm only talking to you, not you know. This is private between you and me. Are you feeling, if you're feeling that, even a little bit, can you send me an email? Just something very simple. Is it getting harder when you pick up the Times or you go to Democratic Underground or Truth Out or Common Dreams or Buzzflash, wherever you go, or Al Jazeera or TV News Lies, or Raw Story, wherever you go, or GregPalace.com, you know all these all these places, you know where I'm talking about, all of the, and you see 7 children blown to pieces by us, by our ordnance. Do you read that now and just kind of blank out, or that's not the right term, but something is happening. Can you let me know? Can you send me just some little tiny comment about that? Or not. Maybe you're so rage fatigued you can't even respond to the question. I understand. It's just starting to worry me. It's starting to scare the hell out of me that I'm going to pick up the paper one day and see, 18 children killed, and then immediately turn to the weather report.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
Ten before the hour. Good Lord. Here's just a few of the emails. This is from Paula Kay in Midland, Texas. Paula Kay in the chat room. I have rage fatigue. I can respond to the question, but the rage comes, goes, and dies, derives again even worse. We're all listening in the chat room. This is from Ralps, who runs the Thread Force at Democratic Underground. Hi, Mike. Everything about the Bush crime family and the Republicans pisses me off, too. This is from John in Manhattan, Kansas. I don't have any energy for anything else, but my rage has no bounds. From Kathy in Arcade, New York. Mike, I'm glad you brought it up. I've been feeling just like tuning out. It's been too long waiting for the rest of our fellow Americans to figure it out. From L. Libby. Absolutely, and I find myself skipping more and more pieces on all of those sources, reading stuff. From Laura in New York. Rage fatigue, that's the whole point, Mike. They've already worn down the rest of the country. Reg writes, almost numb, Mike. I'm with you, absolutely, totally. I'm near the point of losing it and not caring about the consequences, really, Reg. Cindy writes, rage fatigue. I will say one thing to you, Mike. When I reached rage fatigue a couple of years ago, I wanted to move out of the USA. You shame me into staying, so don't you dare get fatigued. Just take a break. I have to do that sometimes. After a breather, I feel better. But I am enraged to the max and not fatigued. I want blood. I'm laughing so I don't cry. Subject line, it's not just you. This is from Diane in Pittsburgh. I think I'm too tired. Is it possible to lose your humanity because you're too tired of all this putrid filth? From Doug. Hi, Mike. I think it results from a feeling of helplessness. After a while, it just makes you depressed. Doug is blogging at yogaphilosopher.com. From Danielle. It's not so much rage fatigue, but the constant state of rage without cessation makes it seem so. Kind of like pain management. The acute becomes chronic. From Clarice. Yes. But it's sort of an exhaustion of frustration, but I regain it somehow and continue to battle another day. Peace to you, Clarice. Those are just a few. I'll print some out during the break and share them with you, too. All right, well, that is... And let me just say this, because I was thinking during this last break when I'm looking at these emails... Of course, it's not about me. I'm just one little... piece in the cog, like you, you and I, you're a cog, I'm a cog or something. We're not even that anymore. I don't know what the hell we are. So it's not about me and it's not about you, but we are the ones dealing with this. I don't believe that anybody in the Bush crime family, directly, indirectly, peripherally, however, I don't think any of these people give a damn about any of this stuff. They get up, they do this stuff. They have their lunch, they go to the John, they go to bed, they get up, they do this stuff every day. hear what happened in Afghanistan? No, what happened? 7 kids killed. Oh, damn. Well, whatever. What's for lunch? They get up. They do this stuff. They have lunch. They go to the John. They do some more stuff. They go to bed. And most of these people have husbands or wives, I think. Okay, maybe not. A lot of them do. What do they do? What do they do when they go to bed at night? What do they talk about? I wonder what Dick and Lynn Cheney talk about when they're laying there in bed before they go to sleep. That's making the assumption they sleep in the same bed in the same bedroom, which they probably do. I have no idea.
I was going to say we're in the same direction. I think Cheney might be hanging upside down by his gnarly little
That's true.
Toes.
That's true. That's true. Or else in that box with all the sawdust. But what do they, you know, what? I've been saying for 4 or 5 years, and I guess my own words are coming back to bite me. These are not normal people. You know, they're vampires. They're hundreds of centuries, or they're centuries old. They just rise up and cause all this weirdness. What's so strange about thinking of these people as the undead? I mean, come on. They, the fundamentalist religionists among them promote the idea of the undead. They just have a different take on it. So, you know, this is my version of the undead. So what's so weird in thinking that, you know, somebody like Cheney was around during the days of Vlad the Impaler? You know, what's so weird about that? But they don't feel rage, apparently. And when they do, they just use the F-bomb. Cheney does. Bush does. They walk through the halls of Congress and telling this one to go F himself and that one to go F herself. And, you know, blah, 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 blah. Maybe we have the wrong attitude. You know, I've thought that before. And then I think, yeah, but how do you adopt a different attitude when the policies of your government result in death and destruction and violence and setting up a wall and a wave of retributive acts that are going to echo and ricochet down for the next, what? Pick a number. 30 years? 20? 10? 50? A century? 300? Who knows? But it is so difficult to deal with this. I guess the real feeling that's involved here is maybe it's not so much rage as it is utter, absolute impotence. The inability to do anything to stop this. Taking the streets didn't work. Working our asses off for candidates who said they was didn't work. Writing letters doesn't work. Emails, get real. Telephone calls, letters to the editor, calling a radio talk show. It's that feeling. Oh, God. All right. No, I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing to be a smartass. I'm laughing so I don't sit here and start gulping. Come back after the break, okay? I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's about 7 past the hour. Well, I asked the question, so I think it'd be fair here to just share some of these emails that just came rolling in. Good God. about fatigue, about having this rage fatigue. I don't know if that's a real term or not, but that's what it feels like to me. The idea being that, you know, how long can you sustain just a sense of total outrage about what your own government is doing? My God. And not being able to do anything, apparently, to effect a change. It's really becoming maddening. All right, here's a couple. This is from AZ, or no, this is from Diane. I am numb, struggling not to lose hope. Thought it was just me. From Darren. Whenever I hear about all the bad stuff going on regarding this administration or the wars, I feel tired. I want it all to end. I want our troops home. I don't want to bomb Iran. When is this ever going to stop? From Cindy in Michigan. Hello, Mike. Enjoy listening to the evening. I'm with you on the whole thing is so effed. We have to do something, and soon. Subject line is, you're not alone. From Mark. Is this from Mark? Yeah. Rage fatigue. Hi, Mike. Yes, and it scares me. It's more of a numbness and just a lack of ability to be surprised anymore. Mostly it's a frustration of waiting for our fellow Americans to wake up. Let's see here. This is from Dave, somewhere near the Michigan-Canadian border. Hi, Mike. Yes, I'm feeling rage fatigue, but I still have the brain cells left to tune into your show at least once or twice a week. Don't let us down, Mike. We need you to help recharge our rage, eh? This is from Bob. Hi, Mike. Yes, I suffer from rage fatigue. Read the news for an hour or two daily. Scream until hoarse. Then ennui sets in. How many letters to my representative can I write? How many deaths can I absorb? I stew and molder in my own poisonous juices, and I lower my standards daily. If I didn't have a great wife and an intriguing 7-year-old boy, I'd be completely bat guano crazy. Bob. From EB in Chandler, Arizona. Mike, don't give up on your rage fatigue. I do feel this as you do. I read all the same sites you mentioned, just shake my head at the sheer number of unbelievable stuff. I do let go for a few days and then go back and loyally read all my favorite sites. I have to stay in tune. I have to know what is happening, no matter how terrible and criminal. EB in Chandler, Arizona. This is from the chat room, from WTF. I've had rage fatigue for a while now. I thought I was the only one also. I got it a few years ago, and I'm tired myself. It started for me December 12th, 2000. Yeah. It's the Supreme Court ruled. This is from Steve in Connecticut. Hi, Mike. Isn't it simply a sign that you're human occasionally feel completely burnt out from the constant state of rage that the last 6 years have engendered in us? It truly is overwhelming at times, and the instinctive reaction, for me at least, is to turn it off, get away from it. Other times it seems the best outlet for my rage is to turn on Mike Malloy so I can be reminded I'm not alone. Yeah, again, I'm not giggling. I'm not sitting here giggling. I don't know where the chuckle comes from. It's like, okay, yeah. This is from John of Vancouver, B.C. in Canada. Rage fatigue, absolutely, Mike, and I'm a Canadian, and that's saying a lot. I used to write diaries at Daily Coast and quite frequently, but I think it's all been said at this point. Rage fatigue hit me at its highest level when the Democrats caved with the war funding bill and Cindy Sheehan resigned from the peace movement. I'm very pessimistic right now. From Stark in Sacramento, hi, Mike. No, I'm not expressing rage. I'm not experiencing rage fatigue. What keeps me going is a fascination with realizing that my enemies are not any terrorists, but instead my neighbors, my coworkers, my fellow country persons who can't yet manage to buy the clues necessary. I'm engrossed wondering what it takes to, quote, turn the brains, end quote. This can't be a planet of intelligent design. This is stupid design. I'm fascinated to see what it might take to change the current tide of the standard or below humans. Stark in Sacramento. Raghu. Oh, no, this is from Alan. What was the question again? From Gloria in Johnstown, PA. Hi, Mike. With me, it's not all the bad war news that makes me tired. It's all the fluff news. From William in Hollywood, I hear you on the rage fatigue. Yes, I'm feeling it. I've read all the horrors that you have since Bush created it into our lives. I get pissed, and then I can't bear to look at any more photos of bodies blown to bits. I hope it's not a form of becoming desensitized. It's feeling helpless and depressed and feeling somehow separated from reality. Yeah, that's the part that bugs me, the separate from reality. From Bob in Miami, rage fatigue, yes, but it's not that simple. I just get, I get just as outraged by the crap swirling around me. I still find myself waking up at 4 a.m. and remembering what a bad acid trip reality has become and not being able to fall back to sleep for hours. I have, however, stopped paying as much attention. I can't stand listening to Randy Rhoads anymore. Hartman is hard to listen to because he's so good, and I just can't stand to hear anymore. I get it. It's painful. Sam Cedar's gone. I used to log on and listen online whenever I was around my computer. His Sunday show isn't the same. That leaves you as the only must-listen host. I guess it's info fatigue. Sigh. This is from Williams. Yes, Mike, I too have grown weary of all this. I sometimes even turned you off because I couldn't take any more. But then I come back for more. I don't know how, but I can't quit. I won't. Whew. This is from Wittick. Hey, Mike, we are outraged in the chat room, but we will prevail. Howard Zinn's book, A Power Governments Cannot Suppress, is a hopeful book on past and for our future. We will unite and take it to the streets over and over with signs, ads, bumper stickers, emails to reps, protests, letters to editor, calls to everyone. Don't stop believing. Keep it lit and we will win. Remember, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they attack you, and then you win. Yeah, who said that? Gandhi? Rage fatigue. This is from Roy Polloy. I had enough when the Democrats in Congress allowed new war funding, no strings attached. I even took the bull droppings bumper sticker off my car because it's not just him I'm mad at anymore. Oh, bull bush it. Rage fatigue from Rob. Don't blame yourself. It's only possible to remain at a level of constant rage for a limited period of time. The brain doesn't support it beyond a certain point. You run out of serotonin, dopamine, whatever. It's like the fight or flight response. You can't stay that way in perpetuity. These filthy scum have pushed many people beyond the level of rage into apathy. This is from Anna. Yes, Mike, I've got it bad. From Eugene. I've been suffering from outrage fatigue now for at least 5 or 6 months. My wife actually asked me if I was okay because I had stopped pointing out the outrage du jour. It's frightening, Mike, because I'm a young man. I'm just 33. From Cindy. No, my friend, I admit that sometimes I get weary about our inability to stop Bush, but I absolutely refuse to lose my compassion for our killed and wounded, for those who are caught in the crossfire, and for those who feel that violence is the only way. I only need to look at my 25-year-old daughter, my 23-year-old son, and my year-old grandson to refill my cup. From KW, yep, I have it too. Don't feel alone. From Judy in Petaluma. I might just happen to tune in tonight. I thought, what an odd question, but then I realized I can barely bear to tune you in anymore. I avoid the news, TV, radio, web, because I can't stand the pain in my belly anymore and the futility I feel. It's like being caught in one of those horrible French existentialist pills, or plays. Camus comes to mind. There's no way out, and our leaders seem powerless to right the terrible wrongs the current occupant and his minions have wrought. I look to humorous movies to take my mind off of it all. From Heretic, Mike, at this point, I think that attempting to take back this country would be as insane as trying to save Rome as it entered its inevitable decline. There's little that's left worth defending, and the chances of successfully doing so are about nil. The end is not yet written, but the course has already been set. Get out while you can. Now, Felix in Madison writes, you're not alone, Mike. I think it's quite understandable. We humans are very adaptable, and I think after 6 years or so of this stuff and all the stuff that happened before that the people like us are aware of, we tend to adapt to the so-called new normal. I think the key is to remember that this is not the way things have to be. We have to do our best to keep it lit and remember that change is possible, even though it may not come easily or quickly. That's from Felix in Madison. From Bill in Allentown, I've been at rage fatigue for a couple of years now, and I thought I was the only one. From Bob, rage fatigue? Yes, the Republicans got me enraged, but the Democrats are making me numb. Good God, and it just goes on and on and on here. Stay with us, I'm Mike Molloy.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Well, y'all aren't suppressing anything tonight. I've just got to share a few more of these with you. I asked the question, and y'all took the time to send a quick email, so I want you to hear some of these. People who took a second here to write. Here's one from Mike. Mike T, who writes, the subject line is, "Eep." I like the subject line. "Mike, all I have time to do is work and toil. My bills are stressed to the max due to the high price of gas, etc. There is no time to worry about what the buttholes are doing to my country. The evil plan is working. I'm so worried about the little things like paying the mortgage. There's no time to even think of the big picture. Keep the flame lit, please." This is from Karen in Ventura. Yeah, I get it sometimes, rage fatigue. The frustration that I feel which leads to fatigue is in part due to the fact that mass media is not reporting real news, the news that many of us get via the Internet. I report the real news to anyone who will listen, and then they do not believe me. I give them news websites to check out and refer them to your show as well. Sadly, I think that in most cases my words go in one ear and out the other. I am most fatigued right now because just a few days ago, I learned that the 17-year-old brother of one of my community's most active peace activists had joined the Marines. My rage never stops. As totally fatigued as I am, I know that my heart will keep me from giving up. I will never give up. Karen in Ventura. Nanette in Northern California. "Hi, Mike. I've been just numb for months and months over this disaster. I care so deeply about what we have done to so many innocent Iraqis and their once beautiful country that I've had to step back and take care of my own health. My distress and frustration with my inability to do anything about what's happening is something I take very personally, and it's just a part of my life now. I'm going to therapy to deal with this, and I meditate every morning before picking up the paper." I know, I'm from California, and it's what we all do here, I guess. You're not alone, Nanette. From Barbara, "Mike, you're not alone, and thank you for reminding me that I'm not alone. I'm in my 70s, and it seems like I've been fighting for and against something forever, which has been good, but this time it is just so huge. Feels like being underwater, and you can't see which way is up. These bastards are not human. They are some kind of reptile breed. No one will ever convince me that Cheney and his ilk ever came out of a woman's womb. Hearing your voice and spirit in my kitchen has helped me more than you will ever know. Thanks again." Well, we should all have a beer, take a couple of days off to rejuvenate, and go at him again. Barbara. This is from Brooke. "Dear Mike, I know I feel the same way you do. My rage reached a peak after the last funding vote. I'm so angry on so many levels. I'm even ashamed to admit that sometimes when I see a news story about the war, I turn it off in the hope that I can ignore it. I knew this crap would happen with the September deadline. My only hope is that after another bloody summer, the public will get behind cutting the funding for the war. That's the only way to stop the war. Sometimes I feel like crying and giving up on my country, but something inside me requires me to continue to believe that somehow, some way, our nation will be restored." That's from Brooke. From Prairie 2, "Hey, Mike, when you say rage fatigue, do you mean that you have reached a level of clinical detachment, like, say, a coroner has, that preserves his sanity, or do you mean an irrational denial of reality that your average Republican has? You don't have to drive yourself insane with guilt to prove you're still human. You can't win the whole war by yourself. You have to pick a target and squeeze." From Terry, who is old hippie on the chat, "Mike, I've had it since the 04 election. I'm so glad I don't have children. We're making a very frightening, dismal world. I do have friends and nieces with small children. My heart aches for them. I try to control what I say because if I rant even a little bit, I feel so hopeless and don't want them to know how bad it really is. Fortunately for them, they are not political junkies and have no idea what's going on. And I think if I were raising small children, I would want to be the same." Terry. From Justice for you. "Nope, Mike. I'm just very pissed off." From Jeannie. "Yes, fatigued from suppressing my rage, shame, and other helplessness. Our poor kids. I work at a preschool, and I often wonder why these affluent Pleasantville people act so carefree. Do they even know what is happening to other children at the hands of our government? Everything is so surreal. My two worlds in pretending in order to maintain a professional image. No staff wants to talk about it." Jeannie. This is from Jill. "I've been experiencing levels of rage that I've not had since I was an angry teenager. I'm serious. It's disturbing. I'm bipolar already. This horror isn't helping, and any time I hear or read someone come out with some ignorant-ass stuff about our government or the war in Iraq or our country, I just want to explode. I pride myself on being a very patient person, but I'm losing it here. I'm really losing it here. It sucks up so much of my energy. I can't get my work done in the efficient manner I prefer. Democracy is slipping through our fingers, and I'm scared. Ever since the Democrats in Congress betrayed our country by passing the war spending bill, I've been especially shaky. Yeah, Mike, I can relate. Jill. From Francis in Montreal, Quebec. Mike, I'm frightened beyond belief. Upon hearing of 7 children dead, the words that come to my mind are, I don't care. I've become so exhausted that even things like that don't even get a blink from me anymore. This is what's frightening, the most frightening of all, the sort of thing that has become common. It scares me no end. Francis in Montreal, Quebec. From John in Oakland, Mike, I cried because I had emotional fatigue until I met a man who had no emotions. Okay, and there's more. I'm going to hold on to these. I'll share some maybe tomorrow night. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.
ExxonMobil is barely getting by with millions in profit.
Nighty night, truth seekers. Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer. More Mike Molloy.
Got a huge stack of these now, and I'll get to them. We'll do some more tomorrow. I just want to finish with this one because it kind of ties in. After reading all these and realizing that, you know, so many people feel the same way, this rage, fatigue, whatever you want to call it, you know, my attitude, I come back with the typical liberal, or maybe it's Italian, or maybe it's Irish, or maybe it's American. I don't know what the attitude is, but I come back with... excuse me, I'm going to say it. No, goddammit, I'm not going to get pushed into a corner. I'm not. I'm not going to let it happen. The rage fatigue is a real thing. You know, I try to fight it my own way. You know, some of us exercise, some of us get high, some of us drink, some of us get politically active. You know, there's all kinds of ways to deal with it. Right, so let me finish it up for tonight, then we're going to go to your phones. But I just want to share this with you from Bridget. She writes, I know this is a little on the woo-woo side, but I really believe that consciousness and concentration have an effect on reality. When I find myself bubbling over with rage and frustration and ready to put my fist or my foot through walls, I take a walk and I hug trees. Not because that changes the world, but because it changes me. And gives me new tools to keep doing my part to change the world. The more I sink into the rage and filth, the more those that are creating that win. I will not let them change me into the ugly monsters they are. If there's no place for hope or beauty in the world, I don't want to be in it. When I hold the beauty that still exists as an option, I hope that my love can balance out the insanity. I can't afford to get overwhelmed and depressed. Bridget, and I think that's kind of the subtext of what a lot of you have said in your brief emails tonight about this thing, you know, this I've just never ever experienced this. I mean, I have gone through I'm talking about in the, you know, in the larger sense, even in my own personal life, where I've had, like you've had, you know, I've had the births and the deaths and the this and the that and the things that make you sad and the things that make you angry and the things that scare the living God out of you, and, you know, the determination to keep going or the decision to give up, you know, whatever. You know, that's just part of sucking in air and exhaling, right? We all go through that. But this other thing, this meta thing, this overarching political thing that we just can't, you know, I can't get my fingers into it. Neither can you. It's just like all of a sudden, you know, there's a time in my life I felt like I can get my fingers into this. I can grab it by the throat. I can grab it by the shoulders. I can do something and shake it and make it stop this. You remember when you felt that way, right? And it wasn't because you were younger. It was because you could do it. There was a way to do it. Whether it was taken to the streets or sitting down and writing letters or demanding or screaming or becoming, you know, if you were. I remember one of the organizations that most impressed me was ACT UP. Do you remember ACT UP? Do you remember when that organization was put together? And the anti-war movement that preceded that. There was a way to get your hands around this thing and just say no, 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 no. And at the same time saying yes to something else. But this time, this is what's driving me crazy. It just feels like there's nothing. When I reach out to grab it, you know, it just, it's not there. It's like Karl Rove's 140,000 emails, you know. They're not there. It's like all these scum suckers, nobody, we still don't know definitively and definitely what rat bastard revealed Valerie Plame's name. See? Just smoke. You go to grab for it's gone. Yeah, it's nothing there. That's the part. Oh, my God. You know, let me deal with a monster. Show me the son of a bitch. Let me get my gun if my fist won't work. Or a hug won't work. But when I can't even see it, that's the thing, right? That's the thing. That's what it is. Oh, I know where it's located. It's located in Washington. I recognize some of its faces as they plot around with their war on terror and their violations of human dignity and human rights. But trying to, you know, to get your fingers into it, you know, like a piece of wet clay, just, you know, I can shape this differently. You know, that's the part that's missing. That's the part that is making me nuts, and I'm sure it's making you nuts. But okay. Just, I think the bottom line, you know, let's vent, let's, you know, talk about it, but, you know, don't give up. You know, a very bad attempt at bad Latin, bad translation, non illegitimi carborundum, you know, don't let the bastards grind you down. All right. Got to do some phone calls here. I'm going to lose my radio talk show host identification. Evan in North Carolina has been holding on all night. Evan, sorry for all the delays. Welcome to the program.
No problem. Thanks a lot. I got two things. The first thing, how I cope with this is, you know, me personally, I make music. And I put it up online and if I could just mention the website.
Sure.
Yeah, it's daylightondemand.org.
Daylightondemand.org?
Yeah, daylight.
Daylight on Demand, okay.
Yeah, and that stuff that you can play it, it's kind of set up like a jukebox, or you can download it, put it on your iPod or whatever, burn it. I don't care. I think it's kind of therapy for me, and I took the liberty of using a few of your words and putting them in the into the music.
Hey, once you hear it, do whatever you want to with it. Just don't embarrass me.
Oh no, I know.
And hell, you could do that if you want to. No, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. That's great. Say the website again.
Daylight on Demand.
Daylightondemand.org.
Right. Right.
All right. Now, what you really called about?
What I really called about was this NSPD 51.
Oh, that presidential directive?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I was kind of thinking about this, and I said, you know, this was published. It was put out on the website on May 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were, they, you know, having all of this, debate about when or whether or not the Democrats were going to pass this bill.
Right.
Now, that was put up there on May 9th. The Congress passed this emergency supplemental later on that month.
Mm-hmm.
And the emergency supplemental is an emergency supplemental. They're not putting it in the regular budget. They
right.
keep funding it as an ongoing emergency.
That's what, that's how Bush has hid this $500 billion war.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, me personally, it seems to me that if Congress had given Bush something other than what he wanted, then he could have not just vetoed that bill, but also invoked that NSPD 51 on top of it.
Oh, God.
Because after all, one of the definitions of catastrophic emergency, if you read that thing, one of the definitions is, quote, a disruption severely affecting government functions.
Are you suggesting then that this was a strategic move on the part of the Democrats to prevent that?
No, I don't think they had a clue about that.
Oh, okay.
Nobody had a clue about it. Nobody even knew this thing was up there until like June.
Oh, okay. I see.
So, but what I'm thinking is, I mean, you know, we're used to thinking of a catastrophic emergency as an earthquake, hurricane,
right.
terrorist attack, but this is chess with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they put that in there and they were going to say, well, they did not fund the war.
Mm-hmm.
The occupation, and this is an ongoing emergency, you know, because you know what I'm saying, because the way they were talking about it, the way Bush was saying while they were debating all this, he was saying
right.
Congress needs to do the responsible thing and fund our troops or else they're going to be butt naked in mm-hmm. Baghdad.
So,
you know what I mean?
Right. So you're saying
it
can be anything that we would not expect that could trigger this and put this country truly into a dictatorship mode.
Simply because all they had to do was they're expecting at some point that everybody's going to turn against them.
Mm-hmm.
And once they're there, he's there. There's the ace. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
All
right,
Evan. They have that card right there.
Now you've given me something to think about before I go to sleep tonight. Thanks, Evan.
Yeah.
All right, pal. Thanks for checking in. We'll be back after the break. Go see Evan's site, daylightondemand.org.
There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised.
Ten before the hour, thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who handled your calls and engineered the program, Billy Foster, who wanders around inside the chat room and keeps things flowing, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Go to novamradio.com if you're so inclined and sign up for downloads and podcasts. And don't forget, tomorrow night, once again, we're going to give away four double-disc DVDs on the ultimate concert film, Glastonbury, this highly acclaimed documentary chronicling the world's longest-running Greenfield Music Festival. So we'll do that tomorrow at the beginning of the program. Back to your phone calls very quickly here. Edie in Montgomery has been holding on forever. Hey, Edie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's good to talk to you again. I thought I'd wouldn't wait another year or so.
Thank you.
proud Nova M member.
Well, that's
you
right,
know.
You are.
Yes, and really needing it because my computer's been down for a week, and my right-wing brother-in-law is letting me use his during the day when he's not here.
Oh, well, good, good.
Isn't that nice of him?
Well, I think it's nice.
I think it is.
You're using a right-winger's computer to do all your left-wing...
Yeah, it's kind of poetic, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. Well, I was thinking, you remember Cassandra from Greek mythology.
Oh, yeah.
How she had the gift of prophecy, but nobody would believe her.
She did, right?
Yeah, that's how I have felt since the first presidential election was stolen in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Like her. Now I know how Cassandra feels. But I was thinking, just popped into my head, if one of the Dems running for president or running for the nomination would just say, elect me and I will roll back all these special kingly kind of things that George has put in place for himself,
mm-hmm.
and I will bring the government back to the people. What do you think the reaction would be? They made a promise like that.
Oh, God.
I think it would be stunning.
It would. It would probably have a profound effect when it was immediately said, but, you know, how long would it take, Edie, for the mainstream media chomp machine to grab hold of that and just rip it into a million pieces?
That's why they should wait, the person who does it, until closer to the election.
But I think...
Or to have maximum, you know, hit.
I just wonder if the average American could handle that kind of honesty.
Well,
as long as it were truly honest.
Just a thought. I know it would be truly honest if Dennis Kucinich said it.
Well, yeah. If Kucinich said it, I think he's capable of saying it. I think Mike Gravel is capable of saying it. And I think I really do believe, and like I said, I think he's had a conversion. I really do believe Al Gore is capable of saying it, too.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, well, I just wanted to throw that out there. And, yes, and please... Folks, remember us at defendersofdemocracy.com.
Defendersofdemocracy.com. We got it. All right. Thanks, Edie. Take care. Barbara is calling from Cave Creek, Arizona. Hey, Barb.
Hi. Okay, quickly. Everybody who goes on your cruise should bring a passport.
Yes.
And if they don't have a passport, they'll be given a receipt for their passport. But they also need to bring their birth certificate because they're not letting people back in if you don't have a passport. If you just have one of those receipts saying your passport's going to be happening soon,
mm-hmm.
you need to bring your birth certificate.
Good advice. Thank you.
And I also wanted to remind people about Henry Cabot Lodge finding out about Ho Chi Minh wanting to use the Bill of Rights as a basis in our Constitution, and they called him crazy. You know, this man's nuts. And the Kurds are now going, yes, we love democracy, so of course we have to kill them.
Yeah. Isn't that the way it always goes? People who do want to emulate the founders of this country are usually put up against the wall and shot.
Yes.
Which is it's very clear to me that neocon America,
Nazis.
Well, not only that, but if there were a Thomas Jefferson or a John Adams or a Ben Franklin now,
they'd kill them.
They'd kill them. They'd send them to Guantanamo.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think the fatigue is mind control. But I want people to go to solartopia.org, and there's a book about Solartopia. And if we could get Solartopia to happen with...
You better spell that.
Solar, like solar power, SolarTopia.org.
Oh, okay, Solartopia.org, okay.
It's a great site. It's a book, Hartman was talking about it. And it shows how we could make a lot of money, introduction by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and how we could recycle solar, wind,
mm-hmm.
hemp products, everything that we could just be living on the planet, planting trees and running all of our machines in a very healthy way. And we're just, why we're not doing it, instead we're fighting to get oil from lunatics.
It's crazy.
Crazy?
It's crazy, Barbara.
All right. Well, I may just come and wave at you guys. I'll just drive to San Diego and wave at the boat. Yeah, I don't want you guys to turn into like the Exodus where you can't get back in the country.
Oh, my God. What a thought.
Well, they better make sure you got your passport or your passport receipt, whatever they're going to give you.
Right.
Prove you're gone. And if you have one of those, you have to have your birth certificate with you.
Yeah.
Remind people.
Okay, well, you just did.
Yeah, because they're not letting people be. Well, whoever signs up, you know, your cruise director people need to let the people know before they get there.
Right. Can you imagine, you know, I lived about 40 miles from the Ambassador Bridge that went from downtown Detroit to downtown Windsor, Ontario. And when I was a kid, we used to go to Windsor, Ontario just for a lark so
right.
that we could come home and say, hey, I left the country today. And now, if you go to Canada, you're going to need a passport to get back in.
I know. I lived in Chicago, and we used to go up there, too.
Oh, my God. Barb, I got to go. Thanks.
Alrighty.
Take care. I'm sorry if I didn't get to your call tonight. I know a lot of you were holding on for a long time. I apologize. We'll do it tomorrow for sure. Oi! Like we're on board the Exodus. All right, take care. Keep your chin up. Keep it lit, okay? I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.